What's up, everyone? Welcome back to National Board Conversations, a podcast highlighting the expertise of National Board certified teachers all over the country. On this episode, I have the honor to chat with Dr. Michael Ida. He's a National Board certified computer science and math teacher. Oh, and he won the 2023 Hawaii State Teacher of the Year. He dropped a lot of wisdom on this episode, so I won't hold you. Here's my conversation with Dr. Ida. Hey, Michael, thank you for taking the time. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Eddie. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll get right into it. So can you give us a brief intro of yourself? What's your current role and where are you at?
Sure. Mike Ida. I'm at Kalani High School, which is in the Hawaii Department of Education. So I'm in Oahu, East Honolulu, and I'm a classroom teacher. I teach mostly now computer science. I started my career as a math teacher. I still teach one section of math, AP Calc, but the rest of my line is now really just computer science.
All right. So now we got a couple of questions to get you to know a little bit outside the classroom. So what are your three favorite foods?
Okay. So my three favorite foods, these are kind of local foods. So these are kind of more ethnic foods. So in Hawaii, we have kind of a large Asian American population. So a lot of my favorites are kind of Asian American staples. So my first one is something called a spam musubi. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's like a piece of spam, which when people hear that, if you didn't grow up here, people are kind of skeptical, but it's awesome. So what you do is you fry it up and you put it between some rice and some nori, which is some dried seaweed, and it's really good. It's a great snack. So that's my first one. If you ever make it out here, you got
to
try it.
Listen, I've been trying to leverage our way out there. I'm like, they keep putting us, we need to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So that should be, and they sell it, you know, it's all over. You go to 7-Eleven, you go to any kind of convenience store, it's all there. So my second one is something called chicken katsu. So what that is, it's kind of like a chicken cutlet, chicken breast, where you dip it in what's called panko flour and you fry it. But it's not quite like fried chicken. It's a lot lighter. The coating is really crunchy, and there's like a dipping sauce that you have with it, and it's really good. Probably the closest thing I can maybe relate to is maybe like chicken tenders, but it's different. It's kind of a little bit lighter, and the dipping sauce makes it really nice. You have it with rice and it's really good.
Okay.
So again, it's something to put on your list if you ever get out here. And then the last one, so this is my go-to. So on those really busy days, you know, when you get home, you had a long day, you don't really feel like making dinner, cooking something for dinner. You know, I'm half Korean, so this is kind of, I grew up on this. It's kimchi and rice, just plain white rice and kimchi. And you just have that. No preparation necessary. You just pull it out of the fridge and you're good to go. So a lot of those busy days, that's kind of my go-to dinner is.
Listen, I feel that, right? So I'm Puerto Rican, and one thing we eat is rice and eggs, right? And eggs, right? Simple. Uh-huh. And I do that sometimes, and my girlfriend makes fun of me for it. And I'm like, listen, sometimes you just need like a simple meal to get you by. You ain't trying to do nothing too difficult. Like,
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of that comfort food that you grew up with and that you kind of just go to whenever you're tired, you had a long day, you just need something to fill you up.
Yeah. All right. So what are the last three songs on your music playlist?
Okay. So I am a Gen Xer. So I grew up in the 80s. So on my playlist, the last three songs that I've got are all 70s and 80s music. So I've got the B-52s. I've got Whitney Houston and I've got Bon Jovi.
Okay. So I like it. And then the one sports team that has your heart, and if you're not a sports person, a movie you can recite line for line.
Sure. So I guess I would describe myself maybe as a very, very casual sports fan.
Okay.
But, you know, when I was fortunate enough to go away to school. So I went to Northwestern University in Chicago, and that's where I first experienced live baseball, the Cubs, Northside.
Oh, man.
So, you know, some friends took me to, you know, some live games at Wrigley. And it's a really nice way to, I found that it's a really nice way to spend an afternoon, especially in the spring, you know, once, you know, the spring starts and, you know, kind of winter recedes. And it's, you know, So I guess I would say
Flying
I
to
have kind of
Chicago,
a
that is
soft
a
spot
big
for the
difference,
Cubs.
man.
Yeah. It was the first time I saw snow. The first time you see it, because I've never seen it before, and wow, this is amazing. But then when it once you get into winter, it kind of sticks around and it turns
Yeah, once
slushy
you
and
start
kind of,
living with it, it's a lot
yeah.
different.
It is, yeah. But I guess I would say the Cubs. Oh, so that would
Okay,
be
I
kind
like
of,
it. And they
yeah.
won a World Series not too long
They
ago, so
did,
it doesn't have to be like wait so
yeah.
long to be like gratified.
Sure.
Like, nice.
Yeah.
All right. Now back to your story in the classroom. Can you share why you became a teacher?
Sure. So I think teaching is in my DNA. So, my mom is a teacher, and I had several aunts and cousins who were teachers. So it was always kind of in the back of my mind that I would eventually become a teacher. And in high school, I had this one math teacher. He was my calculus teacher, and he was a character. I mean, he was a really, a big personality. He kind of just, he had us mesmerized, from the start of class to the end. And he kind of, I mean, he had some high expectations. His was the first class where I mean, the first test we took, I got an F.
Oh
and
man.
that but you know I mean that can go two ways, right? You can either kind of crush you, or it can, okay, I got to do better. And so his personality was such that, okay, you got to do better, you got to step it up. And so that really had kind of a formative effect on me. So I went to graduate school, and then when I got out of graduate school, the job market wasn't great. And so I thought, okay, this is the time. I'm gonna make the switch. I'm gonna go into teaching. And so I made the switch, and haven't never looked back. I mean, it's been a great run.
And now you're National Board certified, and we love you for it.
Sure.
So, what pushed you to pursue board certification, and what was your journey like? Did you achieve on your first try?
No, I didn't. So I've first got certified in 2004. So
So,
it
did you
was
get the box
relatively.
too?
I did. I got the cardboard box, and it was even the era of VHS tapes. So yeah. So it was initially for me, it was kind of curiosity, because it was relatively new at the time. And I remember, I think it was like 1999. The first teacher in Hawaii who got certified, he was kind of in the news. There was some news about him. And so I saw that, and I thought, okay, that looks interesting. Let's take a look at that. Because at that point, I was kind of in the stage in my career where I was, beyond kind of the first year teacher, the rookie stage. I mean, kind of looking for, okay, what's next? Where can I go from here? What's the next challenge? And so I heard about that and kind of took a look at that. And okay, maybe I'll give this a try. First time, didn't quite make it. But the second time, was able to get that. And that was in 2004. And so that was, like I said, that was the era of the box. I don't know if the younger teachers out there will know what the box is, a cardboard box.
Certainly not the ones going through it today.
Yeah, we had to snail mail it. We had to send it through the mail. We had the V, like I said, the VHS tape. So, it was that kind of that era. But yeah, I mean, so initially for me, it was curiosity. But once I kind of got into the process, I saw, oh, okay, so this is it's really got a strong structure to it. It's well thought out. And so yeah, I've been on board ever since.
So, what was the most helpful coaching conversation, resource, or piece of advice you received while you were going through the process?
I think it was, there was a colleague of mine who she did it a couple of years before me. I was going through the process, and I thought, when I first, signed up to do it, I think like a lot of people, we didn't quite realize, the magnitude of the process. So I was going through it. I thought, oh, wow, I don't know if I can do this. But she was kind of moral support. I mean, she had gone through it, and so she, oh, you got to stick with it. You got to, just get through it. When I, thought about giving up, she was there. And so it was really just kind of the comfort of having somebody who had done it before and encouraging me to just keep going, which was kind of really helpful.
So how did becoming an MBCT impact your career?
I think for me, there's a couple of things. I think, one is it kind of opens doors for you. As a professional, if you got the NBCT, there are certain opportunities that you have access to that you might not have, as just a, without board certification. But I think the other thing for me is that it kind of provides you, the spiral. It kind of provides me with a structure and a scaffolding for thinking about, as you go forward in your career, and no matter how many years you have, this is, a structure that you can use to help you think about continuous improvement. And I think for me, that has been the most useful is, okay, how do I, how do you keep improving? How do you not get static? Because I think for a lot of teachers, once you get kind of that, that mid-career, teens and 20s years of experience, then I think for a lot of folks, there's sometimes the temptation to, okay, I've set, I got my, I got my lessons, I'm all set. Let me just kind of coast to retirement. But for me, that has provided me with kind of a way to think about, okay, how can we keep moving forward? And for me, so for me, that's really been kind of the most useful thing about it.
So yeah, on that track of you get kind of stuck, you think about leaving. What keeps you in the classroom?
I think for me, it's just the interaction with the kids. Every day, the thing about teaching is, and I'm sure you know this, every day is different. It's not like an office job or, 9 to 5. You just come in and do your thing and you go home. Every day is different. You got a challenge every day. And sometimes it can be tough, but a lot of times it's the most rewarding thing you can think of. And I don't think I've ever laughed so much as I have in teaching, going to school, whatever. I mean, it's just a riot. I mean, it's the time goes by. And when I first started, first, second year, I thought, wow, retirement, that's so far in the future. But now, you get 25, 26, 27 years, and you think, wow, time flew. Where did it all go? I mean, here we are. But I still got plenty of years in me, I think.
Love to hear it. Love to hear it. So you're a computer science teacher.
Yes,
What are
yes.
you? So I'm sure you can get pretty creative with the stuff you can do. What are some of your favorite lessons to teach?
I think, I think my favorite lessons are something that helps kids see things in a different light. And you think, oh, okay, computer science and math, it's just formulas and whatever. But there's one in particular, I think that really, when it opened kids' eyes, it really kind of, I thought, wow, this is really neat. This is what it's all about. And that's, when we're designing websites, one of the things that you think about is you want to make sure that it's accessible for, folks with maybe visual impairments or what have you. And one of the exercises that I've had my kids do is there's a site where you can kind of run your site through. There's kind of simulation of people who have, say, color blindness. Different types of color blindness. And so you can see what your site looks like through their eyes, the different kinds of color blindness. And that, I mean, that's something that a lot of people don't normally think about. You think, oh, okay, yeah, the color scheme is nice and, it's all good. But when you see it through somebody else's eyes, and you see, oh, okay, that contrast is, it's actually a little bit hard to read for those folks. It kind of really makes you see things differently. And for some kids, it's wow, it's kind of eye-opening. And so things like that, getting kids to see things from a different perspective, even if it's like a small thing like that, for me, that's kind of what it's, really when you feel really good as a teacher.
That sounds cool, man. So you started the computer science program at your school. How have you seen the program expand from the beginning until now?
Yeah, so in the beginning we had just a couple of sections. I think kids were kind of not sure what to expect. We had your typical clientele, kind of the robotics kids who needed to learn coding, and
Man,
the
coding's
kids
hard.
you
Like, I
sure?
remember I tried coding like in college. We had to do like a little coding thing for like a graph on like to overlay on a map. Oh my goodness. I was like, I don't know how people do this for like, I was like, there's so much here, but that's a lot. But yeah, no, go ahead, continue. Sorry.
Sure, yeah. And so, I mean, we started with just a couple of sections. So now we've grown to, we got, a couple of intro sections, we got some AP sections, we got our club. So there's, there's a kind of strong, steady interest in it. And from kids who are not, your stereotypical, you would think, coders, kids who are interested in, art, digital art, or kids who are interested in, storytelling or things like that. So it's kind of neat to see the kind of cross mixing when you have, your typical STEM kids mixing and talking and interacting with, kids who have other interests. And that's that kind of cross-pollinization that's, I think, really powerful. And especially in something like computer science, where it's, I think it's something that, especially going into the future, that, we don't want to just leave that to a small niche of people. We want, everybody to be able to have some input and some perspective and a say in that. Because I think, everything that we think about in the future, all of our challenges that we're facing, there's a strong technical aspect to, how we're going to solve them, or what the challenge is. And so we're going to need all kinds of people to help us out in the future. And that's what kind of we're looking for with the program.
And I think with the, like you spoke on it, going into the future, things are just going to get more and more digital.
Sure. Yeah, yeah,
So
yeah.
we're going to need more types of people to be able to just troubleshoot, like even forget creating,
Absolutely.
just troubleshoot, simple troubleshooting.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because if you have people with just one kind of very narrow perspective, even though they may be very, high aptitude in that one area, there's blind spots. We all have blind spots, and if we can't, come together and share our perspectives, then we're gonna kind of have a limited future. And so we want to make sure we include everybody.
Exactly. So you recently won Hawaii 2023 Teacher of the Year. Congratulations, by the
Oh,
way.
thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
How did it feel when it was announced that you won? Like, I'm sure it was like super exciting. What happened?
It was surreal. I mean, there were the way they do it here in Hawaii, we have our complex areas, which are kind of like smaller organizational units, and we have teachers of the year from each complex. And then you have the state level, and we had a there was a ceremony at the governor's mansion, where they kind of announced the winner. And I was convinced that, it wouldn't be me. And so, when I heard my name, I wasn't quite I thought, okay, looking around, oh, okay, where's that person? But it was really surreal. And I still describe to people, it still hasn't really sunk in. I mean, it's I mean, intellectually, you kind of understand that, okay, you have this distinction, but kind of in your gut, I still, it's still kind of surreal. But it's still, I'm starting to understand, you have a responsibility as well. You're representing the people of your state. And so, I want to make sure that I do a good job with that. But it's, surreal. I mean, like I said, it's still kind of still sinking in.
That's awesome. Again, congratulations. I'm
Well,
super
thank
happy
you.
for you.
Thank you so much.
So, if you had to sell the teaching profession to someone looking to get into it in 1 to 2 minutes, what would you use as your elevator pitch?
I think I would say, my tagline would be, become a teacher, be somebody's hero. Hero not in the sense of like a superhero, you're in a public view, but in the sense that, yeah, I'll share with you a story that I think kind of encapsulates this. I think people, if you spend any time with me, you'll see that I have a visual impairment. So I was born blind. And so I had, a couple of surgeries within the first 6 months of life, and still my vision is still kind of impaired. I'm not able to drive or do kind of some major life things. And so, when I was doing my student teaching, as with a lot of people, that's where you kind of make your huge mistakes. And I remember one day, I was making all the regular rookie mistakes. I'd gotten in a power struggle with a kid that's public. All the things that you're not supposed to do. And so I was talking to my teacher at the end of the day, and one of the things that she said to me is, I noticed that you hold the book close to you, when you read. And I thought, okay, on top of everything else, this is probably going to be the nail in the coffin. She's probably going to say, with all that, I don't think this is a right career for you. So I was, kind of getting ready for that, for the hammer to drop. So I explained to her, I have a visual impairment, all of that. And what she said to me was that it's okay because kids need all kinds of role models. And that for me, that kind of said it all. As teachers, you're going to be somebody's hero. You're going to be a role model for somebody, and we need you in the profession. And so, if you want a career where every day is different, where, it's going to challenge you to your utmost, but, you're going to feel so good at the end of the day, go into teaching. You're going to be somebody's hero. We need you.
That was amazing. Thank you for that story. That was really cool. So who's your favorite fictional TV or movie teacher?
As a math teacher, everybody expects you to say, stand and deliver. But I'm going to take a little different, I have a little different one. So this is going to be referring again as a Gen Xer, referring to the 80s. So Karate Kid, the original with
Okay.
Ralph Macchio. So I guess I would say Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita, he kind of was my favorite teacher. My grandfather's both on both my mom's and my dad's side, my grandfather's both died before I was born. So I never knew my grandfather, but I always imagine my grandfathers were like Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita. I always imagine that's my grandfather.
Hey,
So
listen, that's
yeah.
really cool. So we have a feature on the podcast called the shoulder tap. When you give a tap on the shoulder to someone and let them know they're ready to become National Board certified on here, we give them a quick shout out and we will encourage them to go through the process when we tweet out this episode. So
Sure,
who are
sure.
you shoulder tapping?
I am shoulder tapping. So I have a colleague. She teaches at a different school, but she's a real good friend, a fellow math teacher. Her name is Daphne Okunaga. She teaches at Pearl City High School in Hawaii. So I would shoulder tap her as being somebody who's a great candidate for board certification.
All right. And where can the people find you on social media?
So you can find me Instagram, Twitter, and a little bit of Facebook. So my handle is Dr. Mike Eida, DrMikeEida, on all three.
All right. Dr. Mike Eda, thank you so much for joining
Yeah.
me.
Thank you so much, Eddie. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Eda is awesome. He wrote a blog for us recently that I will post in the show notes if you wanted to take a read. I want to thank him again for taking the time to chat with me, and thank you for taking the time to listen to National Board Conversations. Be sure to follow us on social media all over the place, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you need to, for any all news National Board related, and we'll see you next time.